prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we review underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And for this episode, we're reaching a very important major milestone. And that is Erica and I are sitting in the same room.
Holy shit.
And recording this for y'all.
Oh my God, I can see Lance's face.
I'm tearing up over here.
This
people.
Is weird.
Yeah, y'all. We've never recorded Unsung Horrors episode face to face.
No.
It's always been remotely.
Yeah. We've done a few episodes of my other podcast together a couple years ago. But yeah, this is the first time I've seen my friend Lance in a year and a few months.
Yeah, we both felt comfortable. We're both fully vaccinated.
Yes.
We felt good to do this, and we just, I mean, it's a great episode too. Once we tell you about the movie that we have, it's like of all the movies we picked to reunite, this is a good one.
It is, and it's a good day. And also, another good news. I just want to give a quick shout out to Graham from Death by Video. He left us a very nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Thank you, Graham.
Yeah. It's on Canada. Thank you. We love you, Canada. So you can't see it if you look on it here, but if you're in Canada, you can see the very nice thing that he wrote for us.
I'll do that. I'm going to do that. I haven't read it yet, Graham, but thank you so much for taking the time. If anybody's listening out there that wants to leave a review.
Yeah, we always appreciate it if you enjoy the show.
We can now read it like together in the same room and like really celebrate it together now that this is happening.
We can cheers.
Yes.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Cheers.
We can do that. Boom.
That's an actual cheers. So for this episode, we're doing 90s horror, which I love. Erica is usually kind of on the fence with a lot of
them. I have a hand on the fence. Like, that's about it. I am not on it at all.
Yeah, we've had some bad experiences in the past, specifically Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh.
I don't care.
She doesn't care. I recommend it. If anybody that I know wants to borrow it, I actually have it on DVD. So yeah, 90s horror pick for this episode, and it is Night of the Scarecrow from 1995.
I saw something.
What do you mean? It was an accident. What the hell else could it be?
What if it wasn't an accident?
It looked like you just saw a ghost.
It's like they're protecting some nasty little secret, but nobody knows what it is.
This is hysteria running out of control. Two, maybe three murders in the last two nights. It's not being done by a man at all.
Hey! Don't worry, they're all going to be dead in the
game. Yeah. Come back.
Dad?
He will become... Stop his power.
As of this recording, Night of the Scarecrow has 600 views on Letterboxd. And if you haven't watched it yet, you can find it on YouTube, which is where we both watched it. There is a Blu-ray release out there from Olive Films from 2013, but it's tough to find because I actually looked for it because it has some special features. Mm. But it goes for like a weirdly high amount on eBay and Amazon.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's a great quality. And
I think I remember seeing the Olive Films logo at the beginning of it too on YouTube. So, yeah.
I feel like we've been spending too much time on the summaries. Like we've been really breaking them down and like outlining the film summaries with each episode.
Did I give you inspiration with Patrick?
Yes. Last episode, Erica, she was like, I'm just going to kind of fly through the summary, you know, just like a few synopsis of the film. And I was like, okay, yeah, that works. Let's just start fucking talking about the movie. So Listeners, if you haven't already seen Night of the Scarecrow, I don't think like a detailed summary is going to like persuade you to watch it. You kind of want to, you either seen it and you want to listen to us just discuss it, or you want to hear reasons why or why you shouldn't see it.
Orgy.
I will get there. Just hold on. Okay. So having said that, here's a quick summary of Night of the Scarecrow. Claire Goodman returns home to the small farming town of Hanford to visit her dad, who is the mayor. Her dad is working on developing the land that he and his brothers own and has hired a construction foreman named Dylan to oversee the development. A group of drunk assholes one night accidentally set free the spirit of a warlock by driving a tractor farm over its grave, or maybe it was by pissing on it.
I think it's both.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. However it happened, the warlock spirit is released and possesses a nearby scarecrow. The scarecrow goes on a bloody rampage, killing the descendants, which happen to be the Goodmans, who had killed the warlock a century before. So 100 years ago, the evil warlock had made a deal with the Goodman family that he would make the land fertile and the crops grow bountiful in exchange for freedom to do as he liked, whatever he liked. Well, the warlock started having these wild orgies and actually seduced the young Goodman daughter. So the Goodmans and the townspeople drug the warlock into a cornfield, crucified him, burned him, and buried him in a tomb under a stone slab. And as long as his bones remain undisturbed, the crops in Hanford would be rich each season. But those drunk douchebags release the evil spirit a century later, and Dylan and Claire have to stop it before it's too late, and the warlock can reincarnate back to human form. And how do they stop it? Well, by using the warlock's old book of spells.
Obviously.
And destroying his bones.
No more fertile crops.
That's it, yeah. I mean, it's not worth it.
It's a trade-off, you know.
So the crew of this film, it's directed by Jeff Burr, and he's known for directing quite a bit of different horror sequels, including Pumpkinhead 2 from 1994, The Stepfather 2, 1989, Leatherface, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Mm. No?
No.
You're kind of grunting at all these.
Okay, I have opinions on all of them. I will say this, the trailer for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 is fantastic, but the movie, oh no.
He actually wanted his name removed from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
Smart man.
Yeah, because New Line Cinema had brought in an editor to shoot a new ending, which really frustrated Burr. Mm. And I guess it was just the ending that frustrated him.
Yeah.
But he was denied because the film prints had already been struck, which listed him as director. So he is the director of Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. And I think it's fun. He also directed two of the Charles Band produced Puppet Master sequels, parts 4 and 5 from 1993 and 94.
I've seen them, but here's the thing. I don't remember how many were out at the time. I was late teens, early 20s, and my friend Scott and I did a Puppet Master marathon.
Okay.
There had to be at least 7 or 8 by that point, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because there's like at least a dozen right now.
At least.
Yeah.
And so we watched all of them. So I know that I've seen them, but they all blend together. Like I can't, if you showed me a scene from one, I'd be like, I don't know which one that is.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a lot of the Full Moon productions, like, I just watched all of the Trancers.
Your love for that man.
Tim Thomerson rules. He's going to be my most watched actor of 2021. I'm calling it now. So Puppet Masters 4 and 5. Burr also directed the 1987 horror anthology starring Vincent Price and Susan Tyrell, From a Whisper to a Scream.
I did that one for Horror Gives Back last year, I think.
Yeah, I think you did. Because I saw you had watched it when I saw it.
Yeah, and I remember now why. I watched that movie because of the cast. It was fantastic. It was Vincent Price, Susan Tyrell, Cameron Mitchell.
Cameron Mitchell's a Clue Gulger.
Yeah, and I remember I actually gave it an extra half star because Cameron Mitchell breaks a kid's neck in that movie. So
he does.
Yeah.
And Clue Gulager is awesome in it.
He's always.
Because I did watch, I had never seen it before, and I watched it before this podcast. He plays this guy named Stanley Burnside, who is just this horny little creep.
Yeah.
Really good. The wraparound story with Price and Tyrell was really weak.
Yeah. It was.
And Terry Kaiser is in it. The Weekend at Bernie's guy, the dead Bernie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. He's really funny in it, too.
Yeah. It's funny because you wouldn't think so, but for this episode, I had to do the least amount of extra watches because I had already seen Leatherface, Puppet Master 4 and 5, even though I don't technically remember them, From a Whisper to a Scream, Pumpkinhead 2, and Stepfather 2. Like, yeah. I rewatched Stepfather 2 because I was like, I don't remember how I feel about that. I did rewatch that one, and I actually think I like 2 more than the first one because Terry O'Quinn, off the rails.
Oh, in part 2?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's pretty off the rails, and I've only seen the first one.
Yeah.
I was kind of lukewarm on the first one. Like, it didn't really blow me away.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, this fine little slasher, and I love Terry O'Quinn, but he takes it to another level in the second one. Like, he goes like nuts, and there's a really great like soap opera esque yes. sort of like fight at the end at a wedding, and I was just like, this is awesome. Pumpkinhead 2, I will not vouch for though.
I watched it.
Oh God.
Yeah, and I liked it. What?
How do you even get past the fucking name of it? It's Blood Wings.
It is Blood Wings. Or what was it? There was a clip, as they're like reading about it was a young boy, Tommy, who's deformed. And these bullies like kill him.
Yeah.
And he comes back and basically he's puppet headmaster. He's pumpkin head. But there was a scene in there that some lady's looking at like his history, and it's called like a deformed child runs wild in woods or hills.
Oh yeah.
So I felt like that should have been called. It should have been called Pumpkinhead 2: Deformed Child Runs Through Hills.
I mean, I would have given it extra credit for that, but no. Other than that, those movies are. I love the original, but it's
yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. Lance Henriksen. But yeah, I watched like 6 Jeff Burr films for this.
Goddamn.
And I was entertained by all of them. He directed a movie called Spooky Town or Phantom Town in 1999.
Is that another full moon one?
It is another full moon one. Yeah. And that one is like a kid horror. It's like a family horror with really cool effects and some pretty disturbing kind of scenes. He directed a dramedy called Eddie Presley in 1992 about an Elvis impersonator who wants nothing more than to keep the king's spirit alive.
Okay.
And then he directed like a bunch of 90s, 2000 action horror films that you can kind of find them all on Tubi.
I believe it, yeah.
Including one called Spoiler, Straight to Darkness, which is a war movie, Devil's Den, Alien Tornado.
Oh, come on.
I mean, that just sounds badass.
What?
And then another one I watched was called The Werewolf Reborn from 1998. So that's another full moon. Apparently, Charles Band wanted to make a teen-oriented television series. Mm-hmm. And he did this one, and then he had another director do Frankenstein Reborn. And then Jeff Burr co-directed Frankenstein and the Werewolf Reborn in 2000. This, again, was another like kind of family horror. It was for kids and stuff. And I saw some weird edited version. But again, I was just kind of entertained by it all.
All right.
The intro actually had the Puppet Master characters, all the puppets from Puppet Master, digging up the graves of the Wolfman. And like they were walking by tombstones of, like on a tombstone that said the Invisible Man. And basically it's all the Universal Monsters. Total Charles Band production, super cheesy.
Yeah, I believe it.
but yeah, I've read a few interviews out there with Burr. And throughout his career, he really expressed frustration over studio interference with all his films, with most of his films, including like budget limitations and just other weird circumstances. And that led him to claim in an interview in 2012 that, quote, there were only 3 films that I considered to truly be my own, From a Whisper to a Scream, 1992's Eddie Presley, and 2004's Straight into Darkness, which is on Tubi and I'll probably watch it.
Wait, so not even this one?
No.
Oh.
It's only these 3. He claimed that with all the others, decisions that were made, in my estimation, that weren't for the best. So these are the 3 I stand behind without a mountain of qualifications, which is very interesting because I have to admit of the 6 I've watched, this pick, Night of the Scarecrow, is my favorite.
Yeah, I like Stepfather too, but like this one is, well, I don't want to spoil like what we're going to talk about, but I think I enjoyed Stepfather too, Mm-hmm. But I knew exactly what I was getting into. I watched this one and I went in, this one was already like, this one had to make up for being made in the 90s for me. So it was already at a disadvantage.
I mean, as soon as I watch a movie from the 90s, it's like, you kind of know what you're walking into though, with a movie from the 90s, like you're going to get bad CGI effects. You're going to get really bad acting. Mm-hmm. You're going to get bad everything pretty much.
It's cringy dialogue. It's and I know that going into it, and that's why it's at a disadvantage. Cause I'm like, this is already negative points for me. Right. So it needs to do a lot to build itself back up. Needs to do a lot to pull itself out of that hole.
That makes sense. And I think this movie probably did that. We'll see.
We'll get into it. Yeah.
Junesploitation's coming up, and I would throw out there, I mean, Erica would probably disagree, but Jeff Burr movies are like fucking flooding Tubi, and he has some on Prime. I would add some to your list. Just throw some on there. Give Jeff Burr a little love.
There's no 90s horror category.
Yeah, but there's like sequels, or isn't there
sequels? Yeah, sequel. There's a
sequel. You can throw in sequels, and you can, I mean, I would consider just, you can bend the rules for Jeff Burr. Okay. Night of the Scarecrow, 90s, there's not a 90s
there's
horror.
No 90s
action.
Okay.
I'm sure there's something you could fit. I know there's like sci-fi picks, and from what I read, Spoiler was one of them, one of the movie Spoiler.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Jeff Burr, director of Night of the Scarecrow. Producers include Barry Bernardi and Steven Tyler.
What?
Sullen.
Oh.
Yes, Aerosmith, Steven Tyler, very own. Bernardi has associate and executive producer credits to a ton of TV movies and films, but he's associated with a bunch of Carpenter films like The Fog, Escape from New York, Christine, Starman, and Halloween's 2 and 3. And Jeff Burr actually had a quote on the producers. He said, "Some people really like the movie Night of the Scarecrow, and I'm proud of it a lot. It's very action-packed for the last 15 minutes. That was the highest budget I'd had since Leatherface. It was like $2 million. That movie, it's not that it died. It's just that nobody saw it." He's still referring to Scarecrow. The problem was Republic, the producers that made it, were a team, Steve and Barry. And Barry Bernardi had done a lot of the Carpenter movies. During the making of the movie, they split. So that was problem one. Then Republic, the company that co-financed it, went through a management change and basically went out of business. I mean, I guess you can blame the success of Night of the Scarecrow on the producers and the production company. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was worth mentioning. I'm kind of fighting the good fight here for Jeff Burr.
Okay.
Night of the Scarecrow was written by Reed Steiner and Dan Mazur. Steiner's written a bunch of TV series, including the late 90s Nash Bridges television series starring Don Johnson and Cheech Marin. He also wrote The Shield and some NCIS episodes.
I like how you put more emphasis on Nash Bridges versus The Shield, which is one of the greatest fucking TV shows ever.
I don't think you heard my follow-up to Nash Bridges, starring Don Johnson and Cheech Marin.
All right, fine.
Okay. what was the other guy? Dan Mazur. He had like other TV movies that were just okay.
Okay.
Cinematography, Thomas L. Calloway. He had a ton of TV movies to his credit, but some standout films. SDP is Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Nice.
Which I love.
Yeah. That's the guitar one.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Yes. Like the musical.
Fuck yeah.
1990s Demon Wind.
Oh, hell.
And Critters Part 3 and 4. Mm. His latest release was doing cinematography for Rusty Cundiff's and Darren Scott's Tales from the Hood 3, which was released last year.
Okay. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen Part 3.
Okay.
Part 2, I think I might have done for Junesploitation.
Yeah, you did.
And it was the worst of the month for me. It was really rough. The original, though, is like one of the best anthologies. The composer is Jim Manzi. He worked on a bunch of other Jeff Burr films, providing the music for Stepfather 2, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, Pumpkinhead 2, and From a Whisper to a Scream. But he might be best known for Night of the Demons 2, which has a great score, and having contributed to the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie score, which Waxwork Records released in 2016.
Hmm.
And I always comment on the original score, so let me get this out of the way right now. I watched a lot of Jeff Burr films, and Manzi scored pretty much all of them, I think. And I have to say, he loves his slide guitar. Like, he didn't use it in Scarecrow. He actually gives Scarecrow kind of like a John Waters Jaws type theme, kind of dramatic stuff. But I really dig his guitar work best, and I'm kind of upset that he didn't actually have slide guitar in Scarecrow, because I think it would kind of fit. But check out his other films. I imagine he did like most of the scores with his gold tarn resonator guitar, all very bluegrassy sounding. It's actually very Young Guns 2, Blaze of Glory.
Wow.
So if that's your bag, guys and girls, check it out, because it's mine. Oh, and I have to point out, there are some very 90s rock songs in this fucking movie. It has to be, because it's a 90s horror. Courtesy of a band called Barnyard Slut. So I looked them up, and they're a band from Oklahoma. This is a real band.
Ew.
And they released two albums, released in 93 and 95, called Space Age Motel and Force Field. And I listened to some of them, and they're not good. They're not very good at
you
all.
You think?
They're weirdly endearing. But because we had to listen to them, you know, for watching this movie,
sure.
I pulled their song called Wide Open Skies to end this episode with. So it's actually the song that's played during the end credits of Night of the Scarecrow, but they have like four songs in this movie. So listeners, keep your ears open. Okay, that's the crew. Let's dive into the cast real quick. There are a lot of unknowns in this cast.
I didn't recognize anyone except for Stephen Root and
Bruce.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's another one. John Hawkes.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
So, yeah, there are some familiar faces sprinkled throughout.
Basically, all the kids. I don't know everyone. Well, all the kids. I'm like,
yeah, they're bad. I mean, yeah. So there's two leads. There's the actress Elizabeth Behrens. And she plays Claire. She's the mayor's daughter. She's the lead. And then kind of the boyfriend guy is Dylan, played by John Messi. Elizabeth Behrens has done a lot of television acting with roles in Silk Stockings. Silk Stockings. Lois and Clark and The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. with Bruce Campbell. I don't know if you've ever watched
that. I remember that, yeah.
And ER.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So. No. What's the Mandy Patinkin one?
She couldn't cut it for Chicago Hope. Yeah.
All right.
She obviously didn't have the chops.
Well.
She also had roles in the films Oscar, directed by John Landis, and Badass 2, Badasses, starring Danny Trejo and Danny Glover from 2014.
Badass 2, Badasses.
Yeah.
That's the...
I didn't even look up what the original, I'm sure it was called just Badass.
Yeah.
And then this one was called Badass 2, Badasses.
All right.
Junesploitation.
No.
and then Dylan, John Messi, has also a ton of small TV series roles, acting in The Tracy Ullman Show, Matlock, Northern Exposure, and American Gothic. It seems like all my picks are like TV actors.
Yeah.
Which is,
you get a lot of that.
I have no problem with that, but okay. Gary Lockwood plays William Gordon, or Will, Claire's dad and the town mayor, who's driving the development of Hanford. Lockwood is best known for having played Frank Poole, who's Dave's partner in Stanley Kubrick's 2001.
Right.
Space Odyssey. He also starred in Jacques Demy's Model Shop from 1969 and played Sir George in the 1962 fantasy, The Magic Sword, which I watched for Junesploitation last year.
That's right.
Yeah. It's very middle of the road, you know, kind of serviceable. But that was my Sword and Sorcery pick, starring Basil Rathbone. Mm. I'll watch anything he's in.
Yeah.
Then we have the familiar faces. We have Stephen Root. He plays the town sheriff and one of the Goodman brothers named Frank. Of course, everybody knows Stephen Root as Milton from Office Space and all his roles in the Coen brothers films. And he's also in Get Out and Dodgeball. But he's in the recent The Empty Man, which I haven't seen yet.
I haven't seen that yet either, yeah.
But I didn't even know he was in it when I was looking at his credits. Then we have Bruce Glover.
Yeah.
He plays Thaddeus, a priest. He's another Goodman brother. Besides being Crispin Glover's dad and looking just like him in this movie, he has roles in Polanski's Chinatown and the Connery Bond film Diamonds Are Forever. And he has a bunch of other weird roles, much like his son, and like the one here in Night of the Scarecrow. Dirk Blocker plays the fourth brother, Goodman brother. He's the farmer, the goofy farmer. He had some interesting credits. He plays Jeff Shaw in Toby Hooper's Poltergeist, Melina in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, and he also played a cop in Carpenter's Starman. And he was Coach Harris in Cutting Class from 1989.
Oh, okay.
I guess the next two are kind of familiar faces in ways. John Hawks, he plays Danny. He's the asshole who drives a tractor over the stone slab and releases the warlock spirit. But he's probably best known as Kenny Powers' brother, Dustin, in Eastbound and Down. Did you watch that?
The first season, and I didn't have HBO anymore, so.
He's good. He's good at it.
Yeah.
And he has some other notable acting roles. He's in Congo. He was in Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn. He played Dave in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. He was in Soderbergh's Contagion and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And he was in the Peanut Butter Falcon from 2019, which I loved.
Yeah, yeah.
That was at South by Southwest with Shia LaBeouf. And he also starred in the no-budget horror Scary Movie from 1991. Filmed right here in Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. and it got a recently restored and released Blu-ray. Yeah,
nice.
MACFA. Then we have the beautiful Martine Beswick, who plays Thaddeus's wife Barbara. She was cast in multiple Terrence Young Bond films, from Russia with Love and Thunderball. She was also in the wraparound story of Jeff Burr's From a Whisper to a Scream. She was the lady who was executed.
Okay,
and she played Nurse Trotter in Charles Band's Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death. And I already mentioned I've watched all of them. Tim Thomerson rules. So does Martine Beswick, because she was in Trancers 2. And then here we go. Christy Harris plays Stephanie, who's Thaddeus's and Barbara's daughter. She plays Bibby in Night of the Demons 2, and not much else.
Mm.
And then one last notable actor that I wanted to point out here, Dwayne Whitaker. He played one of the deputies, one of the asshole ACAB cops. And I think everybody would recognize him as Wayne, the pawn shop guy in Pulp Fiction. He's the pervert who calls Zed over.
Thank you. Okay. I saw his face and I was like, I've seen him in something. Okay.
So, yeah, he watches while, you know, Zed has his ways with Marcellus Wallace and all that good stuff. But he has roles in a ton of horror films when I was looking him up. He's in a lot of Jeff Burr movies, Texas Chainsaw 3, Puppet Master 5. He actually wrote and played the title role of Eddie Presley, that dramedy that Burr directed. He was in the original Tales from the Hood. He played Road Rash in the Rick Sloan masterpiece, Hobgoblins, from 1988.
Okay, masterpiece.
Genesploitation, that baby. And Whitaker's also in a lot of the Rob Zombie movies. He's in Devil's Rejects, Halloween 2, and 3 from Hell. And I do have to point this out. I know you watched and loved all the Children of the Corn movies, right?
I you know what I will stand by? Part 3 is fucking dope.
I love The Final Sacrifice Part 2. But
that's got an old lady in a wheelchair getting thrown through a window. So it got an extra, I think, half star from me for that.
I remember seeing that one in the theater and just loving it.
I don't really care for the first. I think it's just super like mediocre.
It's needed for all these to exist. And it's like, what movie was I just talking about? That it's just fine. Stepfather. It's like Stepfather for me, kind of.
Sure.
But I don't know if you remember him or not, but Dwayne Whitaker was in Genesis, Children of the Corn Genesis.
I've blocked all of those out of my head. I've seen all of them, and I am never watching any of them ever again, except for Part 3.
No, I always respect when people watch all the sequels. So when you were doing that, and I was seeing your ratings, I was like, man, I got to hand it to Eric.
I'm committed. It's also like just this sort of like thing in my brain, because I just watched The Omen Part 3. Because I was like, all right, well, Sam Neill's in it and whatever. And then I got the box set. So I was like, well, now I got to watch 4. I'm not going to watch the remake because I've seen that. And
I haven't seen the remake. But I've seen the first 4.
Yeah. So I'm going to need to watch number 4 at some point.
That one's fun.
But three, nobody fucking told me there is a whole sequence of baby murder in that. And everyone who knows me, you all failed me if you've seen that movie and didn't tell me that.
Yeah, that'll be in your top four soon.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's it for the cast and crew of Night of the Scarecrow. So,
So Lance mentioned a few times about some of these movies, Junesploitation. For listeners who are not familiar with that, the website F This Movie has a movie challenge every June where they've got a different category for every day of the month. Lance and I have done it together for the last 2 years. We're going to do it again this year. But you've been doing this is like your fifth year, I think?
This will be my fifth year.
Nice. Yeah. So we're going to be, you know, watching a different movie for every day of the month in June. And then we'll actually have a bonus episode coming out in July where we will be talking about all of that. So if you want more information on that, go to fthismovie.net, check out their Junesploitation 2021 calendar and play along because there's a lot of great categories. There's a few I'm not super stoked about, but
yeah, they switched up. I mean, there's a lot of repeat every year, which is expected, but yeah. They throw out some good ones like Henry Silva's new this year.
Oh, I'm stoked on that
Yeah.
one. That was a hard pick.
What was the other? Julie Strain?
Yeah.
Which that one was like, okay, I'm just going to scroll through Letterboxd and see what I can find. That looks interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited. It just kind of opens doors to a lot of movies I would never check out.
Yeah, for sure.
And it kind of leads you like down that wormhole of finding other movies.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we like to do anyway. So this is like a perfect type of challenge for us. And we would challenge you listeners. If you are like, how do I figure out like new movies to watch? Well, someone put a list out for you to figure it out. So
do it.
Do it. All right. We'll get into more of the film and our thoughts right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, you already talked about what's shitty about 90s horror. So I'm going to get the shitty stuff out of the way first, and then we can be nice to the movie.
Wait, so you do have shitty stuff about
this movie? I do have shitty stuff about this movie.
I don't know.
You know, you mentioned last episode when you were introducing this, you said this movie has everything you love and hate about 90s horror. So I'm going to get into stuff I hate. Now, not talking specifically about this movie, but in general, what I hate about 90s horror is remakes and beating the dead horse, like all the additional like Freddy and Jason and all, like, let's just keep money machine going kind of thing. And I know that's still happening, but the 90s ones were just criminally the worst. And then there's like The Haunting,
the Halloween,
which the Halloween ones, don't even get me started on those. It's polished pretty people. They're painfully predictable. It's quippy dialogue from teenagers who don't talk that way.
Yeah.
And it gets really frustrating. And not to even get me started on the bad CGI, because that's when you start moving away from practical effects and they're like, look at what we can do with CGI. And I was like, it's the whole, what is it, Jurassic Park? Like, you didn't stop to think, you know, you were so concerned about if you could. You didn't stop to think if you should. And it's like, you fucking shouldn't, because it looks awful. It doesn't age well at all.
It doesn't age well, but it was groundbreaking at that time. I mean, all 90s horrors are definitely a product of their time.
Yes.
I mean, I guess every decade really is.
Yeah.
But 80s was, you know, so much more powerful in 70s because of the practical effects. So I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah.
Although in... I'm just going to jump in and defend here and there.
All right.
We'll go. I have a list of the actual practical effects from Night of the Scarecrow, and they do a bang up job with practical effects.
Yes.
But then they sprinkle in these horrible CGI elements where I'm like, oh, you guys were, you're doing it.
Yes. That's the thing is like, and that's what brought this movie up for me. Cause I was like, look at them. Look at you, 90s horror movie using practical effects. Good for you. And but then they had one where my eyes rolled.
I know.
I can name it.
I can name it. I can name the scene.
The scarecrow is hiding in these like piles of bales of hay. Yeah. And then this terrible CGI effect of him like emerging out and he's like, hey there. And I was just like, God fucking damn
that, it. Yeah, that was like the epitome of 90s horror.
It's yeah, exactly.
And what's really confusing about that scene is because it jumps immediately from a really cool kill scene.
Yes.
With all practical effects with that girl. Although they like hide it, this girl, it's Stephanie, who's killed, and she's essentially raped and killed by the scarecrow.
Yeah.
But what's funny is during the kill scene, she randomly turns a strobe light on into the van.
Another 90s thing I hate.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it because it probably does hide like the imperfections of the practical effects that they were using.
Sure.
And what you could see looked fucking badass.
Yeah. But also like, sorry, I'm going to get like, you know, I get migraines from strobe lights.
Well, I'm pretty sure Barnyard Slut was playing over that.
That's like, no.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, it checks all the boxes for the things that I hate about 90s horror, but it redeems itself through multiple things. I also was not a huge fan of the score because it did actually feel very, I was like, oh, even without looking into, let's say I just watched this blind, didn't know anything about it. Yeah. I would have been like, is this Full Moon movie? Because the score sounds like every other Full Moon score.
Yeah, and like I said, Jim Manzi, all his other films, I really like the score.
Yeah.
Because he has that acoustic guitar. And this is like, yeah, it's just like a weak attempt. Yeah.
There's also some weird point of view shot choices. Yeah. Like when, what's the main guy's?
Dylan.
Dylan goes to meet Claire's family. And it's like his point of view.
I love that scene.
Why is it his point of view though?
Because he basically, you're kind of, Dylan is the viewer at that point. This is how I saw it. And he was meeting every single central character in the movie. It's when you meet all the brothers Goodman, you meet Thaddeus, Crispin, or Bruce Glover, you met Frank and George and all their families. So you're like visually seeing like, and you get all their mannerisms and like who they are and what their occupations are immediately. And I'm like, this is brilliant. I don't have to waste time like figuring out who's this guy again. It's all set up in that point of view shot. And I was like, Jeff Burr.
I think it was an odd choice, but
I think it was like, I mean, yeah. I mean, all 90s things is odd choices. And
yeah.
And this, yeah, I agree. It really, the first time I saw it, I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Are they implying he's the killer or something? Because most point of views are killers.
Yeah. And it was just like that weird, like, it has that 90s like weird shaky like tilt, like there's all touch angle.
Because it was him. He was actually talking too, like, oh, nice to meet you, like behind the camera. And I'm like,
it's weird.
It was weird, but I did like how I knew all the characters right away.
Yeah, but so here are the things for me that elevate it and make it, here's what pulls it out of the negative territory for me. The gore, like the practical effects are a huge part. Like when the priest gets his mouth sewn shut and they actually fucking show it like up close. They don't cut away. And then all of a sudden he's like, mouth shut. It looked great. And like, we already kind of talked about the, hey there. And so the girl in the van, she does essentially get like raped by the tree, but it felt like a very deliberate nod to Evil Dead because it was like a reverse tree rape almost. And then like when she finally gets pulled into the ground and her one arm is reaching up, I was like, that's like
that's
the fucking Evil Dead. Like, you know, so I was like, well, at least if, you know, if you're, I like nods like that where it's not like ripping it off, but it's clear that they're paying homage to it. And at least they're doing it to like a fucking perfect movie. So.
Yeah. Yeah, those were good kills. I mean, I think all the kill scenes actually were strong.
Yeah.
Because they all have some sort of practical effects. Mm-hmm. And it kind of kicks off. It's not a kill scene, but within 20 minutes, the scarecrow's possessed.
Yeah.
Because those drunk guys, you know, ran over his tomb.
And peed on it.
Yeah. That guy had a really strong flow. Like,
seriously.
It was like he... like they could have done better practical effects on that because it was very, it wasn't realistic at all. But when the scarecrow is getting possessed by the warlock spirit, I guess they filmed it, you know, pulling out the hay and then they just reversed the camera work and it just looked really good. Like the hay is going up in the sagging clothing and filling it out and it looked badass.
Yeah.
And there's also one scene that, again, it's not, this isn't a kill scene, but when Thaddeus is in the church and he's getting all overwhelmed with, because he's looking at the Our Secret catalog, the Victoria's Secret.
Oh, yeah.
but he bends down and he looks up and the scarecrow is crucified on the cross in the church.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fucking like. But yeah, the Thaddeus mouth stitched. And then when they, what's her name? Claire removes it.
Yeah. And first of all, I was like, why isn't he at a fucking doctor? But I was like, oh, wait, he probably needs to give exposition right after they untether his mouth. And of course, that's exactly what we get. We get backstory about the warlock and what happened.
Orgy time. Well, I do want to point out when Claire's removing the stitches, because sound effects really fascinate me. And it's one reason I couldn't watch the Walking Dead TV series, because the sound effects were terrible, like grass crunching or just like when you stab somebody, it's just like exploding sound effects.
Yeah.
And you get this when she's removing the stitch, it's like, way over exaggerated. So yeah, that's in there. That's another kind of 90s element.
But her dad, he gets, what is it, pitchforked up against the wall, and then he gets the scarecrow puts like one piece of hay like in his vein, and then like all this hay just sort of comes out of him.
It's like pouring out of his eyes and his mouth. Like it looks badass.
Yeah, like I will give this movie like there are some great kills in it. It's pays homage to other great horror movies, and
but
then they like go and fucking ruin it with hay there.
Yeah, that was the worst. Like, I can't believe that CGI effect. And you just ended on a great kill scene with that Evil Dead type kill scene.
Yeah.
And then Stephen Root also, he's killed as well.
Right.
The scarecrow, this is at the end. He's the last brother that's alive. He pretty much, I guess he unloads like, I don't know, 6 shotgun shells into the scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And he's out, and the scarecrow casually like takes his glove off. I think he uses his mouth to bite it off, and he has his hay hand.
Yeah.
And he blows his hand. So all these like Stephen Root is like just impaled in all these like thorns of hay that are stuck in his face and his body.
Yeah. It looks like needles, like in his like acupuncture needles almost, but like hay acupuncture.
Yeah. Like the porcupine woman from Nightbreed.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But the actual special effects, like you pointed out, I think that is what elevated this 90s horror, because as soon as this movie starts, it's very 90s. Mm-hmm. It's like the music, the camera work. And like you said, it looks like it could be full moon, like, horror. And you're like, oh shit, here we go. Like when I first watched it, before it was a pick, I was like, okay, well, I already started it. I'm going to watch it. This isn't going to be a pick, but I loved it. One thing I hated too was, and I think it's kind of 90s too, but I hated how the scarecrow shrieked when he was like shot.
Mm-hmm.
He would do like a velociraptor. Like,
yeah.
And his voice was very, like the thanks for the ride, lady. Like, where's my book? Like,
but it is all like, I also could not understand what he said half the time because they had that sort of like reverb thing going on. And I was like, what the fuck did he just say? And then of all things that I have to hear him say, it's hey there.
It's the most important. And then at the very end, Dylan's driving like some excavator and drops some big thing on him.
Yeah.
The scarecrow gives out the most cartoonish yell, like a bah! Like it completely.
It's like a half Wilhelm scream, but not quite the full like. But it's like half of that. But it's
It was like all like high pitched. Like the scarecrow was gruff and just like evil the whole time. But it worked.
Can we talk about the orgy, please?
Let's talk about the orgy.
This is my fucking absolute
wild orgy.
Favorite. This is like what I was like at this point in the movie. I was like, this is good. This is a 3-star movie. Like, it's got great practical effects and gore. And yeah, it's got some stuff that I fucking hate. But, I would recommend it at this point. And then we get to the backstory of the warlock. And it's not just that we're telling you, he like you know, they gave him like free reign to like do all this evil shit. And like, yeah, he had orgies. They don't just fucking say it. They show it. And it is fucking fantastic.
It's an orgy party from the 1800s, people. And yes. It consists of basically like 50 and 70 year olds just kind of
yes.
going at it.
That's what I love about it, because normally in, you know, I watch a lot of orgies. So normally in orgies, you will only see young, fit, yeah. pretty people. There is an old lady getting yeah. fucking eaten out, and they show her face like she's like having an orgasm. And I was like, holy shit, this movie yeah. is fucking progressive.
Yeah. I mean, that scene was, like you said, that's when I was like doing a double take. Did I accidentally click on something different
yeah.
here?
yeah. It doesn't, it's funny because it doesn't fit in the movie.
It's all filmed too. Like it's a throw. It's like a flashback, you know, mm-hmm. while Thaddeus is talking. So it's like filmed in this like sepia filter, like
yeah.
this. So it is just a complete shift. And the fucking warlock looked like Jimmy Fallon or something.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
Yeah. No one should look like Jimmy Fallon. That's just, I'm sad.
He wasn't sleeping with any of the old ladies.
No.
He started sleeping with the Goodman daughter,
right.
who was young and attractive.
Yes.
So.
But he was not going to deny any of the old people from no. being in the orgy. And I love this movie for that.
Well, and that's too, when I was watching that, I was like, so why did the townspeople string him up and kill him when they're
Seriously.
All having these orgy parties?
Right.
And they have crops and they have.
Because the one guy was like, oh, we made a deal with the devil.
Well, and it was like his daughter, too, the Goodman. Like, you know, he was seducing his daughter.
You know what it was, is he did not want all these older women having orgasms.
Well, yeah, because he was religious.
And yeah.
He didn't want anybody having orgasms.
Yeah.
Screw that guy.
Especially women, because, well, he probably thinks that they don't exist, so.
Well, can we also talk about the scarecrow sex?
Yeah.
So, we talked about how the girl in the van was raped.
Mm-hmm.
But how he plants the seed, he removes his glove.
Yeah.
Or no, actually, he might. I think he keeps his glove on, but this
it, like grows out of the glove.
It's like a dog penis, red rocket, like a little
yeah,
it's sticking out, and it's like this kind of tissuey looking, like a piece of fat, like gristle.
Mm-hmm.
And he shoves it in women's mouths. He did it to the woman. He did it to the girl in the van.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what made her, you know, all the corn and hay kind of spit out of her insides.
Like all the branches and stuff start coming out of her and like, yeah.
And then he did it at the end to Claire when she's mm-hmm. barbed wired up.
Yeah, but he didn't come at the end.
He didn't. No, yeah, he does work out. He gives this in the van when he, you know, when he plant and he says like planted my seed
yeah,
or something.
Ew. Fucking gross.
But he does. Yeah. He does have an orgasm, and you hear a scarecrow orgasm.
Not with Claire, though, at the end.
Not with Claire.
Yeah,
no, this
that's
is,
what I meant.
Yeah, with Claire, he sticks his finger in there, and he does, he lays his seed. He shoots his seed into her, and then that's when he lets out the cartoonish yell, and he's killed, and she casually spits out this little tissue thing. And it crawls like into the ground. Like, you remember that?
It's yeah,
like,
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So,
I forgot she was a spitter. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's when Dylan's like, I'm out. No, but I like the orgy scene. That whole thing kind of threw me off, too. And it's not like 90s movies where they kind of go that sexual and kind of.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really kind of. Satisfying to watch.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, yeah, it doesn't fit in this movie at all, but I am so glad that it's in there because
yeah.
I'm like, fuck yeah, this is awesome.
It elevates it for sure.
And I love it.
Another thing that we have to talk about.
Mm.
We have assholes. We have douchebags in this movie.
Of course.
So much like the high-fiving douchebags in Primal Rage.
Yes.
Who, you know, are literally like yelling, beer me. Remember that? Beer me.
Yep.
These kids are doing the same thing. We have
yeah.
John Hawks playing Danny. And his buddy, I don't know if he ever said his name. I couldn't find him.
I don't think so. I don't remember his name.
But they're basically there to drink, or rather just throw beer and kick ass, not giving a fuck about anything. And it starts off in the very beginning. I think it's within 3 minutes of the movie when Claire's driving to Hanford and Danny, who's John Hawks, is fighting with Dylan, who's he's the construction foreman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically saying, you're fucking fired. You're fired, dude. And Danny gives the most perfect form, middle finger to the face.
Thank you. Yes, like, I noticed boom. That too. It was like every finger was even except for the middle finger. He didn't have like the whole thing sticking out.
It's not just the whole down your finger. It's the, you know, the knuckle straight down, kind of square.
Yeah.
And like just with such force.
Yeah. There is an art to giving the middle finger, folks. And
this, and John Hawks has it down.
Yeah.
And I understand why he got the part. Because honestly, his parts are, again, like the assholes in Primal Rage. His parts are like my favorite.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he's getting fired, Dylan says to him, take it easy. Get the fuck out of here. Leave. You're fired. Like nonstop, just in unison. And he's like, and then that's when he's pushed. Danny pushes him, gives him the middle finger. And then Dylan screams, you want some? Which is basically the epitome of the start of every fight in 1995.
Right. Yeah. You want some?
Mm-hmm. And then Danny also has, he's the asshole, John Hawks. When he's making out and getting ready to have sex with the girl in the van, he says, sit tight. I got to go grab me a tall, cool one.
Yeah.
And she says, I thought that's what I was. And he's like, nope, you're the short, hot one. And he jumps out. She's like, you're such a pig. Although I think that was the kind of a compliment. I think he meant it as a compliment.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess maybe she was upset because he was leaving her for beer.
Yeah. If a girl is getting naked and you're like, hang on, I gotta go get a beer. You gotta work on your priorities, bro. Like
hydration here, Eric.
All right.
But yeah, so all the characters in this movie, not just the dickheads, but everybody's kind of on point.
I feel like the leads, though, are just, nah.
I feel like, you know? Claire is the weak link.
Yeah.
Dylan sometimes was turning things around for me, like at the end, especially during that cop scene where he's like, don't go out. It's when they're pulled over, or no, they're not pulled over, but they stop at a cop barricade.
Mm-hmm.
They're escaping the fucking scarecrow.
Yeah.
And it's a total like ACAB moment. These cops are basically yelling at him, you know, saying, put your hands on the car or I will shoot you in the fucking face.
Right.
And Dylan's reaction then was really pulling me in, but it was a little too late. Cause I do. I think the two leads were, compared to everybody else who were so dialed in, like Bruce Glover, who's always dialed in, and Steven Root, who's like always on, and even the mayor dad, he gave me like mad Peter Jason vibes.
Hmm.
Like I feel like Peter Jason could play this guy, but this guy was so good it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were just like dialed in on all their roles with their mannerisms and how they were delivering their dialogue. I haven't seen a lot of Scarecrow horror.
Okay.
So, and I know there's a lot out there. And I know when we had Sam Deegan, she mentioned that she had a Scarecrow themed watch day like last
marathon,
fall.
Yeah,
a marathon. And that sounded like a blast. And I really like Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Because I watched that as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it was a Terror Tuesday. And that's my favorite. I enjoy that one more than Night of the Scarecrow. But are you familiar with any? Have you watched any Scarecrow horror?
No. Return to Oz?
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, that's not a Scarecrow movie. It's pretty creepy, but yeah. Yeah, but like that was like nightmare fuel for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not really. It's never like they've always looked really bad and cheesy. Like honestly, I'm gonna be on. If I saw the cover for this in the video store, I'd be like, this movie can fuck off.
Oh, in an interview, I was reading with Jeff Burr. He said that they had like this awesome poster art, but he said the VHS art, which I'm assuming is what's on Letterboxd.
Probably.
He's like, it's horrible. Like we had this really great art, and I haven't really seeked it out to see if I can find it online, but
yeah, that's it looks just like 90s art. Is Jeepers Creepers Scarecrow? I don't know. I've never watched
Jeepers Creepers.
What's his face?
He looks like he has like a bag head. I think he comes from like a well or something. But maybe he is a scarecrow.
I don't know. I don't care. I'm not going to watch him because
I was wanting to know because I'm always interested. Well, now I'm interested in like how these scarecrows come to life because I do think this was a very original, like possessed by an evil warlock, and you know,
yeah,
it's interesting and it seems like to bring something original to the genre. But I haven't watched enough scarecrow movies to actually compare anything to.
Yeah, if anyone's got any suggestions, we're open. Lance will watch them.
Yeah,
and then I'll wait.
Yes, specifically if they were released between 1990 and 2000,
Jesus
just
Christ.
In that area right there.
You're just asking for it.
All right, so overall rating and recommendation, Eric, what do you think of Night of the Scarecrow.
I think I mentioned earlier, like, it was at a 3 for me. But after the orgy scene, I was like, up, you know, I got my rating got an erection. So it went up to 3.5
nice.
Out of 5 on Letterboxd. It's hard for me to recommend 90s horror. Honestly, like when we did our intro episode, you know, and I picked 90s right, horror, yeah. Everything that I listed off for 90s horror was not typical of
like Candyman.
Yeah. Candyman, Exorcist 3, Manson Family.
Yeah.
You know,
those are like diamonds in the rough.
Right. Like those are just movies that happened to come out in the 90s. Right. You know, they're not like 90s horror. And so for me to recommend a movie that has the shit that I hate about 90s horror, that should say something to people.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I would totally recommend it. I think this movie would, it's a crowd pleaser, I mean, in my opinion. I think it would play really well at like a Terror Tuesday programming mm-hmm. with just a bunch of friends. But yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars too as soon as I watched it. I watched it again actually today when I should have been working. But I wanted to get another view in, and I'm glad I did. And I would recommend multiple viewings to all my friends. I actually did. My friend Austin, mm-hmm. I told him about it, and I was like, dude, this is my next pick. And he immediately watched it. He gave it a high rating as well. So trust us on this one, people. What about double feature pick?
I've kind of already spoiled it a little bit, but I'm leaning into 90s here.
Oh, a 90s double feature.
I know.
Okay.
I know. I'm like, if I'm going to go 90s for this episode, I'm going to fully lean to it. Don't expect this to happen again though. So, I am going for a corny 90s double feature, and my pick is Children of the Corn Part 3, Urban Harvest.
Okay.
So I have the DVD that has like Children of the Corn 2 through 7, I think. And I was going to get rid of it. And that was a big part of like why I was going to watch all of them.
Did you get rid of them?
No, I kept it because okay. I like part 3. So
I'm about to borrow that one.
So it's two orphans from Gatlin are placed with foster parents in Chicago. So it doesn't take place on a farm, but there still is corn because one of the orphans, it starts recruiting all like the 90s hip hop city kids for his new cult. And he brings corn from wherever Children of the Corn, Gatlin, with him and plants it in an abandoned warehouse in concrete, and it miraculously grows into a cornfield. And so it's an equal mix of, it's just like Scarecrow in that it's an equal mix of, not equal because Scarecrow has more that I like than what I didn't like, but it has right. stuff that you love and hate about 90s horror.
Does it have CGI?
Yes.
It does.
Yeah. But the end... It's got effects by Screaming Mad George.
Oh, okay.
It's got cringy dialogue, predictable plot points.
Yes,
It's a shameless cash-in sequel. It checked the box for all the things I hate about 90s horror, but special effects in it are neat, and it leans so hard into like it's such a product of its time of like, oh yeah, the kid from the cornfield is recruiting all of like the kids with like the sideways hats and all the fucking 90s awful fucking fashion. Plus at the end, it's also got a killer scarecrow. So it's not a scarecrow movie, but it's got a killer scarecrow. So it kind of fits with what you're
totally.
Asking for. So
I'm into it. I mean, like I already said, I was a fan of Children of the Corn 2, The Final Sacrifice.
Yeah. Three is better than 2.
Okay, cool. I mean, that one's 90s too. This one sounds more 90s cause we're deeper into the decade at that point. So
yeah. What's your double feature pick?
I went with Rawhead Rex
Ooh,
from 1986.
Old choice.
So this would be for a don't mess with the stone slab in the middle of the field double feature.
That's the very specific double feature, and I'm here for it.
I mean, it also has a lot of phallic imageries and there's a psychotic priest in it. So Rawhead Rex is a short story written by Clive Barker. Mm-hmm. It takes place in Ireland, and there's this strange stone monolith that a farmer is attempting to remove from a field. I think to grow crops. Moving the stone releases Rawhead Rex, this weird cartoonish alien werewolf, hulky humanoid monster, who's apparently some sort of bloodthirsty beast god. There's a lot of kills. Like Night of the Scarecrow, I think there was like a body count of like 10 or 11. There's a lot of kills in this. There's some decent gore and practical effects. Rawhead Rex is... probably not a good example of the practical effects, although
no.
He has retractable claws. I mean, there's a lot going on with him. He's dressed like a pirate or something. I don't know. It's worth checking it out. And there's even a scene of Rawhead Rex baptizing a priest by pissing on him.
Wait, that's not how baptisms work?
Oh, you got something to learn.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Probably. I mean, in a lot of churches, I'm sure they do. But it's a mess of a movie. Even Clive Barker hated it. But I still think it'd be a blast in a great double feature. So, and that's currently streaming on Shudder. And Kino released a Blu-ray a few years back.
Okay.
But
that's right. I remember that coming out. I don't know if Children of the Corn is 3 is streaming anywhere, but yeah, it's on like a
it isn't, 6 I wanted
or 7
to watch
pack.
It.
Okay. I'll loan it to you, but you know, don't lose it because that's sacred to me.
Yeah, I guess it's just a DVD, really. There's no Blu-ray. Yeah. Somebody like, needs to get on that. That like, should have been on your wish list episode.
Let's pack all the Children of the Corn movies. Yeah, I just want 3 on Blu-ray. I want special. You know who's in it, but no lines in it? She's one of the disciples who gets recruited. Charlize Theron is in that movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's very recognizable. You see her, and she's very young.
And is like, that's not like her first credit, is it?
I think it is.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, she's the very last person credited on Letterboxd. No lines in it, but I'm sure she's just on there because someone was like, yeah, you can't hide your shame.
You got to love Letterboxd.
Yes, love them for that.
All right, so next pick.
Yes.
What do you got?
All right, so next month, it is our Unholy Father's birthday, Lucio Fulci. So I picked one of his movies, and I think probably listeners are asking themselves, what fucking Fulci horror movie could we possibly be covering that has fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd? And it's because this next movie is not a horror movie. I am cheating.
What?
Sort of.
I'm sure it's disturbing.
It is.
That's all that matters.
It's kind of like The Flesh and the Fiends because it's based on a true story and it's an adaptation of that story and a very close to the actual story itself. So we're going to be doing 1969's Beatrice Cenci, a.k.a. The Conspiracy of Torture. And I'm going to pronounce the title correct for one time this episode and maybe one time next. It's Beatrice Cenci.
Oh.
Because you got to ch your C's in Italian. So
very well done.
But I'm not going to be able to hold that for next episode. So
yeah, I'll probably call it Conspiracy of Torture.
Yeah. Or Beatrice Cenci, whatever. Yeah. It's fine. We're American.
Yeah.
People understand. So
we're lazy.
Anyway, this is a period drama. Do not get scared off, folks. Based on the true story of the Cenci family in the late 16th century. It's the story of Beatrice Cenci's conspiracy to murder her father, nobleman Francesco Cenci. Like I said, it's not a horror movie, but it definitely has Fulci's stamp on it. There is some torture scenes that are really brutal. Francesco's death scene, not a spoiler if you read the true story, has some brutality to it, including Fulci's first eyeball trauma on film. So there's that. And I really just want to take a chance to pick a Fulci movie for his birthday next month. That's a category for Junesploitation. So if anyone's participating in that, you can watch this movie for that. And I just assume that anybody listening to this podcast is a fan of Fulci, at least to some degree, but has probably never seen this one.
I haven't, so I'm excited.
So as of this recording, it has 700 views on Letterboxd. It's available to watch on either an 88 Films Blu-ray release, which is all region. It's also on YouTube, but I don't believe it's the transfer that 88 Films has, so it'll be a little bit more grainy if you watch it there. And we're also going to have another special guest for this episode, which I'm really excited about. Author and film writer historian Troy Howarth.
Woo!
He is the author of multiple books on Italian horror, including Splintered Visions, Lucio Fulci and his films, Murder by Design, The Unsane Cinema of Dario Argento, and 3 volumes of collections on giallo films called So Deadly, So Perverse.
I'm really excited about having Troy on. Like, I feel like I'm just gonna, you introduce the film, I'm just gonna put my like elbow on the table and just listen to what he has to say.
Pretty much.
I'm excited.
Do you just talk? Because he also did the commentary for the 88 Films release.
Oh, nice.
So like, I'm just gonna be like, yeah, we're just gonna introduce ourselves and you can just talk for the next hour. Is that cool? Awesome.
All right, I'll work on mine for next pick. That's all I got.
So yeah, check it out on YouTube, or if you happen to have the 88 Films Blu-ray release, be sure to watch that before our next episode comes out. And if you are not already, please give us a follow on Instagram, Twitter, Slasher, or Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd under the username Also Watched. You can also follow my other podcast, Customers Also Watched, on Twitter at CAW Podcast or Facebook or Instagram under Customers Also Watched. And Lance, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at L Scheibe on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram.
And if you haven't already, be sure to check out Lance's shop where he has lots of pins for sale, including his newest one, John Waters.
Yeah. And I mean, all this talk of Fulci, I really want to do a Fulci pin next. So,
I mean, you should.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, he probably should have been released before Waters, but whatever.
Yeah, well,
I'm happy with this pin. Everybody go check it out, please.
Yes, it's awesome. All right. Well, Lance, thank you for making me a believer in some 90s horror.
Yes. And thank you for making me comfortable and, you know, somewhat venturing out into the world and having me to actually be face to face in your awesome little studio
here. It's weird seeing your face, though.
It is. Maybe next time I'll wear my Macho Man mask.
Maybe that could work.
I might be a little muffled, though.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. There'll be something. I mean, I can't look at you the entire recording.
No, I can't either. It's too awkward. We just can't. It's like we're on like a first date or something
it's
like
overload,
that.
It's
like you just can't look too much at each other. But yeah. So yeah, I'm glad that, you know, we're back together. We got the band back together.
Yes.
And just want to thank everyone for listening to our first episode that we got to record together.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. We'll see you next time for Beatrice Cenci.
Thanks. Bye.